ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around talking about he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 106 of the report. Or should I say 106B? This is the second time I've had to record this episode, man. My fucking computer crashed yesterday. I didn't have any of the audio recorded. So, yeah, man, I got to do this again. If you are watching it on Spreecast, or if you got a chance to check it out on Spreecast, that was the original episode. But I got to do this again. So, yeah, man, before we get started, before we get into the entire show, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course, I'll play those on the show and respond in kind. You can also email the show. The email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. I'll read those emails here on the show, and of course, I will respond to you here as well. Chop it up with me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. So hit me up on Twitter. We could chop it up throughout the week. Send me your ass hat of the week submissions, man. Preferably give me somebody to talk about, man. We got one this week. Yeah, possibly two. We'll see. But yeah, man, send me those ass hat of the week submissions at asshat@thespanreport.com, man. You can also donate to the show. And you can donate to the show by going to the www.thespanreport.com and hitting the donate tab. And you can set it up to where you give one time, or you can set up to where you give recurringly, whether that be weekly, whether that be monthly, however you feel comfortable donating. It would be very much appreciated to donate here at thespanreport.com. And we made it easy for you to do, right? And for all of your Span Report needs, yeah, you go right there to thespanreport.com, www.thespanreport.com, and everything's available there. So, yeah, that's what we're going to do. But, yeah, man, and excuse the voice, man, right? Cause this is my my up early in the morning voice, right? This is the quiet storm voice, right? Yeah, man, it's a bit early. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Normally I'm fast asleep, but I went to bed relatively early for a Saturday night. And yeah, man, so I got up and realized this had happened, and now I have to do this again. So yeah, man, let's get into the show. I had one random thought this week, man, and it was something really, really random. It was random in the sense of I was riding past this place, and then it just popped in my head, right? Am I the only one who wishes that Popeye's Chicken had a chicken and waffles breakfast combo? I posted this question up on Facebook, and apparently I'm not. You know what I mean? Popeye's is probably one of my favorite chicken places, which is funny because I remember as a kid I wouldn't eat chicken. Like if it didn't come in nugget form, your man Span wasn't fucking with it. I know sometimes I can piss a lot of folks off if they see me eating like chicken wings, because like I don't eat I don't just pull bones out of my mouth. I know my uncle does that. I got an uncle who just pop a wing in his mouth and just pull out bones, and he eats everything on that wing. I had a really big mental block as a kid eating wings, seeing veins and blood and all that other shit. So, yeah, man, sometimes you'll see Span eating some wings, and there might still be some meat on there. And I know a lot of chicken wing lovers be like, man, what the fuck are you doing? So what I normally do, man, is if I try to get chicken fingers I eat breast. I eat chicken breast meat quite often. And every now and again, man, I eat chicken thighs and legs. You know, sometimes my wife has this recipe that's really fucking good. And, you know, when she gets in there, she does a little bit to that chicken, man, I'm all for it. So, yeah, man, Popeyes needs to have like a chicken and waffles combo, like a real chicken and waffles combo, like one breast, one waffle, and it's like your choice of Alaga syrup or Mrs. Butterworth syrup. Because I know black households love Alaga, dog. Excuse me. I know we love Alaga, man. That's some thick ass shit. I remember when I was a kid, man, that's all my mother would buy was Alaga, and I didn't realize that there was so many other choices until you go over to a friend's house and they're not eating Alaga. They got Mrs. Butterworth or something like that over there, and it's like, man, this is good, and it's not as thick, you know. Yeah, man. So yeah, Popeyes, man, I know that's $1 million idea and I really shouldn't be giving out $1 million ideas, but I just realized like Popeyes only opens at like 10-11 o'clock in the morning, and you'd be like, damn, man, like y'all missing out on a hell of a lot of money if y'all just do chicken and waffles. Like even if it was just chicken fingers and waffles, y'all would make a killing. So yeah, Popeyes, y'all need to get on that. All right, man. Something cool happened this week, man. I was really kind of proud of this. TV One did an episode of Unsung on my grandfather, Johnny Taylor. And that's some really cool shit, right? Some really cool shit. One of the things about it is you know, it's always been a bit of a prideful, you know, thing for me to be able to say that, you know, Johnny Taylor was my grandfather, even despite the fact that me and my father never really got along. We never really spoke. And I've spoken to those issues that me and that man had at length here on the show. I did an episode called Daddy Issues at one point. I spoke about him when he passed away. So we never really had that great of a relationship, but I've always taken a little bit of pride in the fact that Johnny Taylor was my grandfather. And I only met my grandfather twice. Like I can only remember meeting my grandfather twice when I was maybe like 10 or 11 years old. And yeah, man, like it was real cool to see him being profiled in that way. There was an episode of Discovery ID called The Will a couple years ago that profiled my grandfather, and it was about it was basically about after he passed away, what it was, you know, the division of his estate. And it came to light that my grandfather had three other children that he had never really acknowledged that were his biological children. And, you know, they had to divide my grandfather's estate up 9 different ways. And most of that came from the sale of his house and everything else. But yeah, man. So TV One, they did this episode of my grandfather on they did this Unsung episode on TV One. And here's a bit of a promo here for it.
On a brand new Unsung.
When you heard a Johnny Taylor song, you didn't have to say, who's that?
He was a hustler.
He was a pimp at one time, con artist.
Who made the first ever platinum record in history.
After that, he just blew up like bubblegum.
But how did he rise so high and fall so hard?
Drinking and doing the drugs kind of helped him forget about everything.
The amazing Johnny Taylor on an all new Unsung, Wednesday at 8 on TV One.
All right. Now, you know, one of the things that was always an issue with me and my father was the fact that I learned a lot of things about my grandfather through means like this. Like I learned about, you know, the fact that he passed away through the grapevine. Like a relative called me and was like, I was in the bar, Span, and is your granddaddy dead? And I was like, I don't know. I was away at college. I was at Tennessee State. I didn't know. And I had to jump on the internet real quick and find out. And sure enough, that's what had happened. And I had real beef with my dad with that, you know, because of that. And a lot, like I said, a lot of the things that I've learned about the man that was my grandfather is things that I've learned through, not through being told through family stories, is a lot of the research that I had to do on this man on the internet. And so, yeah, man, that was always a bit of a contentious thing between me and my father. But you know, I always thought it was cool, man, like that my grandfather was the first person to have a platinum single. You know, that's one of those Jeopardy tidbits that, you know, a lot of folks just really don't know. You would think you know, maybe Elvis Presley or Michael Jackson or the Beatles or someone like that, but no, it was my granddad, the first person to ever have a platinum single. And this was at the time when you had to sell 2 million records in order to reach that status. Another thing too, man, like it's always kind of strange when, you know, you realize how far reaching when I realized how far reaching my grandfather's music had gone and how he touched a lot of folks, I was watching this and, you know, I was on Twitter, I was live tweeting it, and the hashtag was going on with Unsung, and I was looking at some of the people who were tweeting, you know, about how they remember this song, how they grew up with this music, how their parents used to play this music, how they still love this music. Some celebrities that I had, you know, looked up to were asking, like I remember Chuck D was actually asking for this episode of Unsung. So yeah, man, it was cool to be able to see the people who were connecting with my grandfather's music in that way. And, you know, and like I said, it's just cool, man. I don't know how else to explain it. I mean, it's just a really cool thing. And, you know, I learned a bit about my grandfather that I didn't know before. You know, I didn't really know the extent of his drug and alcohol addiction. I didn't know that my grandfather pretty much handled most of his business affairs, without a manager. I didn't know that, at one point, my grandfather was a pimp. Like, they talked about this during this Unsung episode. And I'm going to have that episode available on thespanreport.com. You guys can watch that entire episode commercial free on thespanreport.com. So you can check that out for yourself. But yeah, man, it was a lot of things that I learned about my granddad while watching this. And it's always cool, you know, to be able to have that bit of Black history, right? We just coming out of Black History Month. To have that bit of Black history within my own family, man, that's real cool. And I'd like to thank TV1 for producing that episode and for bringing that episode, that story to light. I learned a lot about my grandfather that I didn't know prior to. So thank you to TV1 for doing that episode. Yeah, man. Moving on. There was another thing that happened over the course of the week that had a lot of people talking. And it had a lot of people wagging fingers. And that was the release of some new Jordans, right? Or the re-release of some Jordans. Because I believe these was a re-release, I want to say, of the Jordan 13s. I think they were the 13s. Something like that. I know they were a re-release, right? And so there were lines formed around the country at shoe stores around the country trying to get a hold of these Jordans, right? And so you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting was the fact that so many people are judgmental, so judgmental, man. And I know I'm one of those. I can be a judgmental prick myself, which is why I can recognize this. But so many people are judgmental about the Jordan buyer, right? There are a lot of assumptions made about folks who buy Jordans. The, you know, one of the assumptions that I kept seeing all the time was the fact that many people don't believe that the Jordan buyer has life insurance, apparently. Everybody kind of assumes that, yo, man, they out here buying these Jordans, but, you know, when it comes time for them to die, man, they got a GoFundMe account going on, man, like they ain't got no life insurance. And a lot of that is bullshit. Really, it's just your way of saying that they should be spending their money on other things. But you wouldn't necessarily want folks counting your pockets in that way. And counting pockets is pretty much like the equivalent to me of like meat peeping. You know what I mean? Like if you sitting around counting the money that somebody else got going on or what they're doing with their money, you obviously don't have enough going on for yourself. And, you know, I saw a lot of that. I saw a lot of people sitting around just wagging their fingers, talking shit about folks, assuming these people were on welfare, assuming these people didn't have jobs, assuming these people were not good parents, assuming these people just didn't have their priorities in place. And it was weird to kind of watch that happen, right? There was an incident here in Detroit, I want to say this weekend, either Friday or Saturday, there was the Eastland Mall was closed because of an incident at the mall. And they were talking about like the news, the way the news reported it, just like Jordan release closes mall. And it instantly went from, let's not be fucking, let's not be cute. It was a lot of white folks talking shit about, you know, they're talking shit about niggas buying shoes pretty much. You know, and they talked in code. You know, it was a lot of dog whistling going on about, you know, acting like animals. These animals act as if they don't have anything more important to do. I bet you they don't go to parent-teacher conferences. I bet you they don't have jobs. I bet you they have EBT cards. I bet you I'm helping to pay for those Jordans. It's like a really insidious, racist undertone that goes with that. right? And it's interesting because when you think about Jordans, man, like, of course you have some people who buy Jordans because they like wearing them. Some people buy Jordans because they like collecting them. Some people buy Jordans as rewards for their kids for good behavior. Some people actually resell those Jordans for a profit, right? Because they become collector's items to a large degree. And it's ironic that the person with the largest collection of Michael Jordans doesn't have an ounce of melanin in his body. He's a white dude, man. He has the largest collection of Jordans in history. And so, yeah, man, it's weird to watch people sit up and wag their fingers about how other folks are spending their money. And I talk about it being like pocket watching, because the funny thing is, like, people hate for you to watch their pockets, but they have no problem doing it at all. And then when you point it out that that's exactly what they're doing, they're like, no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm just more concerned about their financial well-being. It's like, come on, bro. No, you're not. You never concerned in that way. And a lot of the times it's like, yo, and this is just how I feel about it. It's like, if they don't owe you money, then it's none of your fucking business, man. Real talk. If they don't owe you money, it ain't none of your fucking business. And so, you know, I got a little irritated with that. And I remember that there used to be a time, man. Let me not talk about myself in the third person. I recognized in myself at one point in time that was something I would do exactly, right? I would do that exactly. Like, I would sit up and just wag my finger. And I'm like, look at these dumb motherfuckers buying them shoes that they done came out with like 4 or 5 times already. And they spent $200 for them. I used to do that same shit. You know what I mean? I used to do that same shit. I remember when the first pair of Jordans I ever owned was a re-release. Like, I couldn't afford Jordans when they were coming out as a kid. My mother wasn't buying those for me. I bought my first pair of Jordans. I was 21 years old. I had a job at... what do they call that place now? Lucent? I think it's Lucent Technologies or some shit like that. I had a job at the warehouse or whatever, and I on my way to go buy some Air Force Ones. It just so happened that the Jordan 7s were on sale, and I ended up walking out of the store with a pair of Jordan 7s. I guess the difference is now is like back in the day, they had the shoes widely available. So if they re-released the shoe, it came out in much the same quantities as... as any other shoe. Now I believe they have such a limited release that they become exclusive. And so it's so much harder to get. And so that's how you get folks standing in line to go get these shoes, because it becomes an exclusive, an exclusive purchase, so to speak. And yeah, there's a bit of status that goes with that, you know, to some degree. There's some status associated with a lot of things you buy. You know, an iPhone for a lot of folks is considered the best phone. I would disagree with you, but yeah, there's a lot of things that folks would consider status symbols and whatnot. And, you know, there's always going to be a segment of the population who feels as if they're better if they don't buy into that. You know, there's always that segment of the population who feels like they're just above everything, right? And so, yeah, I recognize that I used to do that kind of shit. And there was one time where until I started waiting in line to buy shit, right? That's when I had to check myself. Like, you know what, Span? You better not ever say shit about anybody else standing in line to buy a goddamn thing. I remember the first time I stood in line to buy something, it had to be the Nexus 4 cell phone. And the reason that I had stood in line, because the Nexus 4, when it first came out, was a very, like, you couldn't buy it online, right? I tried to buy it online, couldn't buy it online. So I had to search around to find out which T-Mobile store would have the Nexus 4, found a store. They said they had 4 units in the store. So I got up that morning and I was the second guy in line. So, yeah, I did that. And then there was another time where I stood in line and I bought my PlayStation 4, right? This is when PlayStation 4, the supplies for the PS4 was so short. And so I went up. I got up early that morning. I took my daughter with me. She was sitting in my car with the heat on because it was cold that morning. And I got there at Best Buy at 6 o'clock in the morning. There was already 15 people in line in front of me. And, yeah, man. And it was, you know, we got our tickets at like 7 something in the morning. And I felt so bad for the kids who showed up with their parents at Best Buy at 9 o'clock that morning, thinking that they were going to get a PlayStation 4, not knowing that they had to have tickets to get the PS4, and they walked out so disappointed. And I felt bad for them, but not bad enough for them to give them my PlayStation 4, right? So, yeah, man, like the way that people, you know, wag their fingers at black folks, particularly because there is this assumption that black folks are the only ones out here buying these shoes, that black folks are the only ones standing in line to get these shoes, that black folks aren't good parents because they're waiting in line to buy these shoes, that black folks don't have jobs, that black folks don't apply for jobs. Never mind that, you know, you apply for most of your jobs online and everything else. It's just one of the, it's just it's fucked up. It's fucked up. And I was watching this shit happen, and I made up a meme. It was like, why do you give a fuck? Like, really? Like, if they don't owe you money, then leave them the fuck alone, man. If they asking you for some money at some point, then maybe you can bring that up to them. Like, well, you did just spend $200 on some Jordans. But if they're not asking you for any help on anything, if they don't owe you anything, shut the fuck up. It costs you absolutely nothing to be quiet for a minute. Bite your tongue. It don't hurt. It don't hurt. Yeah, man. Another thing, man, and this was something that happened, and I haven't really been talking about Bill Cosby a lot as of late because there haven't been a lot of things going on with Bill Cosby's case. As a matter of fact, I think they're on some bit of a break because he has some other cases pending about whether or not whether or not the case can actually be thrown out, right? So they have some other things pending that could actually affect the case that he's on trial for or, well, going to court for now. And so, you know, one of the things that happened was Malcolm Jamal Warner, former Cosby kid, was on the show The Real earlier in the week, and they asked him about how he felt about what's going on with Bill Cosby, and here's what he had to say.
So reruns of the show have actually been pulled off of television.
Right.
I want to know, how do you feel about that?
Well, there, I feel several different ways. Okay. One, because the show is taken off the air, it's literally taking money out of my pocket.
Right.
So I got my own personal feelings mm-hmm. about that.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because it personally affects me. Mm-hmm. But even outside of that, you know, you just look at just how the media is playing this whole thing out. And I can't help but think about Woody Allen, Roman Polanski, Stephen Collins, who it's very clear, you know, the crimes they've committed, but there's no one that, you know, has been calling for Woody's movies to be pulled off the air.
Right.
Roman Polanski is still celebrated. Stephen Collins' show still comes on. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting how it's very unbalanced. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were trying to take Mr. Cosby's star off the Hall,
no.
you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And I am in no position to defend him because I can't.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But nor will I throw him under the bus.
All right. Now, yeah, man, Malcolm Jamal Warner just went full Hotep on us right there. He just went full Hotep. Never go full Hotep. And the reason that I say this is because this is a sentiment that gets passed around by the Bill Cosby we're trying to buy NBC crowd quite often. They try to make the point that Roman Polanski isn't in jail, or Woody Allen's still making movies, or that you know, Seventh Heaven still comes on TV. I don't know exactly which channel it does, or if, you know, it may still be on television. I don't know. It's pretty fucking hard to find if it is, right? But there's this contingent of the Hotep community who will say that because these other men are able to pretty much pursue their artistic, you know, they're pretty much able to do their thing artistically, that Bill Cosby should not be held accountable for what it was that he's being accused of, right? And one of the things, like, I understand why this keeps coming up, right? Because there's this layer of what you would think is a racial element of what's going on with Bill Cosby and why Bill Cosby is being persecuted in the way that he is. I know a lot of people, they point out the fact that the majority of Bill Cosby's accusers are white women, but they really erase the fact that there were also black victims, alleged black victims of Bill Cosby as well. And they totally disregard them. Like, just totally disregard them. Dumb sisters don't mean shit. As a matter of fact, Beverly Johnson, I've seen a lot of brothers all of a sudden start calling Beverly Johnson a lying ass hoe. You know what I mean? So it's weird to see. It's kind of weird to see that unfold. But I said this previously on another show called The Chad Factor a few months ago. And I was asked this question about whether or not I would be just as hard on Roman Polanski and just as hard on Woody Allen and just as hard on Stephen Collins as I would be on Bill Cosby. And my answer to that was, Bill Cosby is relevant to my community, and this is why I speak so passionate about it. I'm not going to pretend that Woody Allen means anything to me. I'm not going to pretend that Roman Polanski means anything to me. I can't tell you at all what Roman Polanski has made unless I did a Google search for it. I can't tell you anything about a Woody Allen movie because I haven't seen any of them. So I'm not going to pretend that I care as much about what's going on with Woody Allen and Roman Polanski as I would with Bill Cosby, because Bill Cosby is relevant to my community. I grew up watching The Cosby Show. I wasn't necessarily connected to it in much the same way that a lot of folks were, but I watched it coming up. I watched A Different World coming up. My wife still watches A Different World right now on Netflix. So he's getting some money somewhere. So there's this element of, trying to say that if you don't talk about these other folks, then you should shut up about Bill Cosby. Like, nah, fuck them. And not only that, it's as if folks don't already see those guys as pariahs. You know what I mean? It's like they act as if Woody Allen doesn't walk around with the whispers of him being a pedophile. They walk around with the fact that or that Roman Polanski is, if it's totally forgotten that Roman Polanski can't step foot on the fucking United States soil. That he isn't being, like, they act as if these guys aren't being persecuted to a large degree. Like, there's nothing happening to them. Yeah. And it's funny because at the same time, a lot of the people that I know talking about Woody Allen and Roman Polanski couldn't tell you what Woody Allen has made, couldn't tell you what Roman Polanski has made, hasn't seen any of their films, haven't seen any of their projects at all. But they bring those names up because they know why. Those are white dudes who are accused of sexual misconduct. And we as black folks have to point out the fact that white people are accused of sexual misconduct, too. And it's funny when you talk about accountability. It's funny when you talk about accountability a lot of times, man. And there's a lot of times where, they'll tell you they don't care about what the white man is doing. It's funny how hotep logic kind of works, right? Don't tell me about what the white folks are doing. I don't care about the white community. I only care about what's going on with us here in the black community. But then when you try to hold a black man accountable, then all of a sudden it's about, well, what about what this white man is doing? That's where that ashy nigga hotep logic starts coming in. And so, yeah, man, like I said, when it comes to Roman Polanski, Stephen Collins, Woody Allen, yeah, I'm not going to pretend like I give a fuck about what's going on with them, because I have no social connection with them whatsoever. What they did was fucked up. And I'm not about to make any excuses for them. And much the same way that a lot of people are trying to make excuses for Bill Cosby. Well, if Stephen Collins was able to have his show on TV, then surely Mr. Cosby should be able to have his show back on TV, even though Bill Cosby right now is on trial for sexual misconduct as we speak. Excuse me. So, you know, there's a segment of the black community, especially when dealing with black men, that believe, and I've said this prior to this show, there's a lot of black dudes who simply want white male privilege. They would be, if they could change anything in the world, it isn't so much about uplifting the people, it's about uplifting themselves above everyone else. If black men could have the same level of white male privilege that their white counterparts enjoy, then they would be perfectly content in that. And nothing else has to change. And that's why that hotep ashy nigga logic has to stop. And that's why I said Malcolm Jamal Warner went full hotep, because that same ashy nigga logic I see permeating through a lot of the hotep circles. You know, you see this all the time, man. So, yeah, man, Malcolm Jamal Warner said that. I get it. He has a personal investment in that. He's losing money because that show is off of television. Them checks must be really good. You know what I mean? But, yeah, man, that happened this week. And so Malcolm Jamal Warner went full hotep. It was so unfortunate. But yeah, man, we got to stop doing that shit. Stop making that comparison about accountability, especially while you're trying to not hold a black man accountable, right? Let's stop doing that. Yeah, man. So that happened. Another thing happened this week, man. And this has to deal with presidential politics. And for a long time, and I remember when Donald Trump first started running for president, you know, I looked at it as a joke, right? And I looked at it as a joke because I was like, yo, these people can't be serious. Like, this can't be a serious run for president. There has to be some sense on the Republican side. Like, there has to be, right? You as a person who tries to operate on logic, there you would think that there has to be a level of sanity on the Republican side, just on the probabilities of logic and everything else, right? But no, that's not happening. That's not happening. The Republican Party has Donald Trump as their front runner. He's more than likely going to be the Republican nominee for the president of the United States. Now, I keep hearing, reports of the fact that the Republican establishment is trying to maybe take, not necessarily award Donald Trump the Republican nomination, that he may end up going a third party route. I don't know. But yeah, man, like, it's become a thing to where Donald Trump is winning primaries. Donald Trump is ahead in the polls. Donald Trump is offending a lot of motherfucking people. He sent a lot of fucked up shit. And he hasn't actually produced a single policy at all. And we're like, what, I don't know, maybe a year and a half or maybe a year into this whole campaign thing. He has yet to produce any sort of policy at all. He just keeps saying the same platitudes. We're going to make America great again. I'm going to build a wall. We're going to bring back jobs. I'm going to bring back the best jobs. I'm a negotiator, and I'm going to get in there with Putin, and I'm going to do some great things. And he doesn't say anything at all. Nothing substantial at all. So there's that. But what happened this week was the fact that Donald Trump had been endorsed by David Duke, former leader of the KKK. I think he was Imperial Wizard of the KKK, whatever fucking titles they be having in that goofy ass organization. And he acted as if he didn't know who the fuck David Duke was. And so in this interview with Jake Tapper of CNN, Tapper asked him about the endorsement of David Duke. And here's what happened.
I want to ask you about the Anti-Defamation League, which this week called on you to publicly condemn unequivocally the racism of former KKK Grand Wizard David Duke, who recently said that voting against you at this point would be treason to your heritage. Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, just so you understand, I don't know anything about David Duke, okay? I don't know anything about what you're even talking about with white supremacy or white supremacists. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Did he endorse me or what's going on? Because, you know, I know nothing about David Duke. I know nothing about white supremacists. And so you're asking me a question that I'm supposed to be talking about people that I know nothing about.
But I guess the question from the Anti-Defamation League is, even if you don't know about their endorsement, there are these groups and individuals endorsing you. Would you just say unequivocally you condemn them and you don't want their support?
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I'd have to look. If you would send me a list of the groups, I will do research on them. And certainly I would disavow if I thought there was something wrong. But you may have groups in there that are totally fine, and it would be very unfair. So give me a list of the groups, and I'll let you know.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know David Duke. I don't believe I've ever met him. I'm pretty sure I didn't meet him. And I just don't know anything about him.
All right. Now, he said he knew nothing about David Duke. He said he knew nothing about the Ku Klux Klan. He needs to do more research. He needs to do more research on the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan, who for decades terrorized black folks across this country, who killed and lynched black folks across this country, who made it so that black folks would be scared to vote, who made it so that black people would be scared to, live their lives as normal human beings, right? Donald Trump needs to do research on the Ku Klux Klan, right? So he was asked about this again on the Today Show. And here's what Donald Trump had to say here.
Talk about another issue that has bubbled up, and this is your comments on a CNN program where you were asked about David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the KKK. You said three times in this interview, I don't know who David Duke is, and you refused to disavow or distance yourself from him. Now, a lot of people are scratching their heads over that because, number one, you disavowed David Duke 2 days prior. Why are you pretending that you are acting as though you don't know who this person is? Why not disavow David Duke, disavow the KKK? What's going on?
Well, first of all, he talked about David Duke and other groups. He talked about other groups.
Yeah, but you said three times, I don't know who David Duke is.
No. Well, I know who he is, but I never met David Duke. So you see, when you talk about it, I never met David Duke.
But in 2000, you refused to run on the Reform Party platform because David Duke was a member of it.
I disavowed David Duke a day before at a major press conference, and I'm saying to myself, how many times do I have to continue to disavow people? And the question was asked about David Duke and various groups. And I don't know who the groups are. I said, would you do me a favor and tell me the groups? He was unable to tell me
that. He says, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here. And you said, honestly, I don't know David Duke.
Okay, so let me tell you. I'm sitting in a house in Florida with a very bad earpiece that they gave me. And you could hardly hear what he was saying. But what I heard was various groups. And I don't mind disavowing anybody. And I disavowed David Duke. And I disavowed him the day before at a major news conference, which is surprising because he was at the major news conference, CNN was at the major news conference, and they heard me very easily disavow David Duke. Now I go and I sit down again. I have a lousy earpiece that is provided by them, and frankly, he talked about groups. He also talked about groups, and I have no problem with disavowing groups, but I'd at least like to know who they are. It would be very fair to disavow a group, Matt, if the group shouldn't be disavowed. I have to know who the groups are, but I disavowed David Duke. Now, if you look on Facebook, right after that, I also disavowed David Duke. When we looked at it and looked at the question, I disavowed David Duke. So I've disavowed David Duke all weekend long on Facebook, on Twitter, and obviously it's never enough.
Real quickly, ridiculous. It was a big piece in the New York.
All right. Now, it was the earpiece. He didn't hear him. It was the earpiece. He didn't hear him. He has to do research on the groups that are endorsing him. He hadn't heard of David Duke. He hadn't heard of the KKK. We heard that during that first part with the interview with Jake Tapper, right? Now, one of the things that I want to kind of talk about was the fact, and this is something that I think I said this last episode, was the fact that the Republican Party has been courting, right-wing extremist voters for quite some time. And a lot of this kind of festered about around the time of the rise of Barack Obama during the elections for Barack Obama. I remember I did a video years ago on YouTube kind of speaking to some of the ways in which the Tea Party was a racist element within the Tea Party. And I remember getting into arguments on YouTube, right? The YouTube comment section is a cesspool of all comment sections, but it's the underbelly of America. It is how people really feel because they feel like nobody will know these are the things that they say and how they feel, right? But I remember getting in arguments with a lot of people who would purport themselves to be Tea Partiers to say, well, you know, we got black people who want to be Tea Partiers too, and they believe in fiscal responsibility, and we've been taxed enough already, which is what the tea thing really meant. And, we got black people that think like this too. And it's like, okay, that doesn't make anything you say more legitimate when you have a racist element in your organization or within your movement, and none of you are really doing anything about getting them away from what it is that you're trying to promote. So the Tea Party element, although we haven't heard a hell of a lot from them as of late, they never went anywhere. They're still part of the party. A lot of them had actually elected, government officials. A lot of them, we have a lot of congressmen who were elected during that supposed Tea Party revolution. A lot of the obstructionist government that we've seen as of late when it comes to President Obama's presidency, a lot of the things he's tried to do, the Republican Party has turned into the party of no. The Tea Party has brought the Republican Party further to the right than it's ever been. And it's funny because they always talk about Ronald Reagan. This is the party of Reagan. Well, Ronald Reagan wouldn't even be welcome in this Republican Party, you know. And it's funny when you would actually look for, especially for someone like myself who would look at a Ronald Reagan presidency or even a George W. Bush presidency as fucking disasters. But when you look at that and then you look at who's running now, he's like, oh my God, what the fuck is this, right? So there has been this element of racial animosity brewed up in the Republican Party. There has been this this undercurrent of we got to take this country back. right? This has been a mantra for a lot of years now, especially once the Tea Party became prominent. Well, we got to take our country back. You're like, where are you taking it back to? Who took it from you and where is it going? Right? Who took it from you and where is it going? And I spoke about it on the last episode where I talked about the fact that there's a lot of white voters. So there's a lot of white voters who are scared. A Trump voter is a scared voter. They're scared of terrorism. They're scared of becoming a political minority, that they don't hold, they don't wield the same amount of political power that they do now. They're scared of the fact that the country is browning. You know, and around 2050, this country will be majority minority. There will be a various number of minority groups who actually outnumber the number of white folks in this country, right? So there's that fear of, yo, we're not going to be as important as we used to be, right? And there was this article that I was reading on Medium.com. I think the writer was Emma Lindsay, I'm sorry. And she kind of spoke to this as well in this article. She said, which, by the way, directly ties into how they are racist. Not all Trump supporters are necessarily racist, but a fair number of them explicitly are. Normally, when liberals talk about racism, they use racist as an endpoint. Trump is racist is by itself a reason not to vote for him, and being racist is an indicator of a person who is morally deficient. But if you don't take this as an endpoint, if you ask what do people get out of being racist, you'll start to unravel the emotional motivations behind it. One of the best unpackings of this I have read was Matt Browning's piece, Last Place Avoidance and Poor White Racism. To summarize, no one wants to occupy the last place in society. No one wants to be the most despised. As long as racism remains intact, poor white people are guaranteed not to be the worst. If racism is ever truly dismantled, then poor white people will occupy the lowest ring of society. And the shame of occupying this position is very painful. This shame is so painful that the people at risk of feeling it will vote on it above all other issues, right? Now, I get that. But as I kept reading this particular article, it was almost like we should coddle them with baby gloves, right? We shouldn't necessarily shame them for being the racist, bigot assholes that they are. That we should kind of give them a pass on that. We should understand their plight. When, of course, I would, you know, someone like myself who's been dealing with being a black man in America, supposedly being the lowest rung of society in America, having to deal with that, having to fight through that, and not necessarily have my concerns met when it comes to politics on a national scale, when it comes to addressing the needs of the black community or as black man or as black woman, having those needs met politically haven't necessarily been met in the same way that these folks are having their needs met. And so I can't have any sort of, I don't necessarily have any sympathy for the white racists who would vote for Trump and vote for Trump above all else, right? I don't have any sympathy for that. And so, you know, it's weird to see this kind of apologetic tone taken for the racist Trump voter, right? It's a weird thing to kind of read. But one of the things that kind of like really grinds my gears is about the way in which the Republican Party has been courting the racist element within their party is the fact that they'll do that while simultaneously acting as if that's not happening. So what ended up happening again this week was the fact that Van Jones and Jeffrey Lord kind of got into a little bit of a spat on CNN about this very issue. Check it out.
We have a big problem at this point now, because I agree with you about a lot. I think that we have taken him not seriously. We have not respected his voters. But there is a dark underside here. And Essie is right. He is whipping up and tapping into and pushing buttons that are very, very frightening to me and frightening to a lot of people. Number one, when he is playing funny with the Klan, that is not cool.
He didn't play funny with the Klan.
Hold on a second. I know this man when he gets passionate about terrorism. I know how he talks about terrorism. The Klan is a terrorist organization that has killed...
A leftist terrorist organization.
You can put whatever label you want. That's your game to play.
No, it's your game to play. History.
No, they're not. We're not going to play that game.
We're not going to understand history.
No. You need to take a serious look at the fact that this man is playing fast and loose and footsie. When you talk about terrorism, he gets passionate.
He says, no, this is wrong. But when you talk about the Klan, oh, I don't know, I don't know. That's wrong. And then you came on the air and you said, well, this is just like when Reverend Wright was speaking.
Yeah.
Reverend Wright never lynched anybody. Reverend Wright never killed anybody. Reverend Wright never put anybody on a post. And you guys play these word games. And it's wrong to do in America.
It is wrong to understand that these are not leftists. They were a
What difference does it make if
it
you call them
a
leftists?
Lot of difference,
they call them chipmunks. They kill people. And you don't play games with that.
And you don't hide and say that's not part of the base of the Democratic Party. That has been, they were the military arm, the terrorist arm of the Democratic Party, according to historians.
That's
for God's sakes, read your history.
All right. This dude has already said a few fucked up things, right? Let me go ahead and try to. Let me go ahead and address a couple of them. You know, he made the point to try to say that they are a leftist terrorist organization, right? But why does this leftist terrorist organization gravitate towards Republicans so well now? Why was David Duke, when he did run, gravitate towards conservative voters so well when he ran? Why is David Duke, KKK member, telling white voters that it would be detrimental to their white heritage to not vote for Trump? If they were a leftist terrorist organization, why would they do that? Why are they so enamored with the Republican Party as of late? Why are they voting Republican by and large as of late? When you think about the what they would call the Bible Belt, a lot of those red states, you know what a lot of those red states used to be? Or who wins those red states, so to speak? Republicans win those states. Guess where the largest population of purported KKK members are? Those same states in which Republicans tend to win over and over and over again. So the wordplay in which he's trying to engage in here to try to drop those little bit of tidbits, like, yeah, they were a leftist organization. They were the military arm of the Democratic Party. Now, for those of us who do know our history, know that the Democratic Party used to be what the Republican Party is now. A lot of Dixiecrats left the Democratic Party and became Republicans. And they're still Republicans. They are still Republicans to this day. They gravitate towards a Republican mindset to this day. They're a very conservative group. They're a Bible reading group, right? A lot of them will tout the Bible as the reason why they have the beliefs that they do right now. They believe that. And so for Jeffrey Lord to try to say that you need to read your history, well, some of us are versed in this history, that they were they were a leftist organization, a leftist terrorist organization. Well, why are they doing so many right-wing, why are they voting for so many right-wing candidates? Why are they supporting so many Republican candidates? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
I'm not, I don't know, I don't care.
His whole attitude of dividing by race is still here, and this is how Democrats do the deal.
I don't care how they voted 50 years ago. I care about who they killed.
I care about American history. It counts.
You have stood with Donald Trump, and you have made a case.
He cares about American history. It counts when he believes it's convenient for him, right? When he believes it's convenient for him, because he's trying to draw some distance between the KKK and his candidate, Donald Trump. But the KKK votes Republican now. Let's not get this fucked up. Votes Republican now. And one of the aims of the KKK used to be to keep niggas from voting, right? They wanted black folks not voting because voting meant political power. And if black folks had political power, they would be able to assert themselves in much the same way the white folks were asserting themselves. So the KKK shunned. Let's just say shun. This is the Span Report. They killed black folks to keep them scared to vote, to keep them petrified to register to vote. They came up with voter restriction laws. Like if your grandfather could vote, then you could vote. Well, we know a lot of our grandfathers at one point in time could not vote because they could not read. They had literacy tests to keep you from being able to vote. You know what's happening now? A lot of Republican candidates now, a lot of Republican legislators now are trying to come up with various different ways to keep black folks from voting. They're coming up with voter ID laws, right? Well, you need an ID in order to vote. Well, really, if you were registered to vote, you can go into your local polling place, say who you were, and they'd hand you a ballot, right? If you're a registered voter, they'd ask you for your address, ask you for your name, give you your ballot. Now they're asking for identification. Now, I know a lot of people will say, well, yeah, shouldn't you have identification anyway? A lot of older folks surprisingly don't. Surprisingly don't. And not only that, when you look at some of the ways in which they are taking DMV or Secretary of State offices out of some of these districts, now you put another barrier between a person and their ability to vote. You know who benefits from lower voter turnout? Republicans. Republicans benefit from lower voter turnout. It's the only reason to exist. It's the only way to explain why a Republican electorate would opt to make voting harder. Make voting harder. Or take or disenfranchise a segment of the population because they know they have no political chance with these people. So in order to minimize the Democratic advantage of the minority voter, they make it harder for those voters to vote. So, yeah, man.
For Donald Trump, when nobody else wanted to, and you've earned the respect of an awful lot of people, but when you do not acknowledge that he did not answer that question with the passion he's answered with other terrorist organizations, you do yourself a disservice, you do your kids a disservice.
He has made this point over and over and over again. This is a media thing here. Did he make a mistake? Sure, but he has said this many, many times. I've gone back and looked. He's well on record over and over and over again on this.
It's worse than that, sir. It's worse than that. That whole thing with those Central Jogger kids, he got the entire city of New York whipped up on this idea that these kids had done something wrong. And then when it turned out they were innocent, we all make mistakes.
Right.
He never apologized to those kids. And that's a stain on him. And you can walk through time after time where he's done stuff like that. The stuff he said about Native Americans being, you know, criminal organizations and mafias. He said so many racially offensive things.
But, Ben, what you're doing here is dividing people. We're all Americans here, Ben. You are dividing people. This is what liberals do. You are dividing people by race. This is what liberalism is all about.
The Klan divides people by race.
You have to divide by race.
The Klan killed people by race. And he had the opportunity. And he didn't do it tonight.
And they did it to further the progressive agenda.
Why do you listen? That is, first of all,
now I'm gonna take a screenshot of this as he said that. I'm gonna take a screenshot right now because this dude has this really fucking goofy look on his face as he said this, right? Hold on just a second. Take this screenshot. Bam. All right, now what he said there, that they did all of these things to promote the progressive agenda. What is progressive about killing anyone? If you notice, most of your progressives are against the death penalty. If you notice, most of your progressives are against police brutality. If you notice, your progressives are about voter rights and keeping voters franchised, so to speak. There's nothing about what the KKK has done that is that you can attribute to being a progressive agenda. There's nothing about it. Everything about the KKK has been of a conservative slant. And anybody who's paid any attention to the KKK knows this. And it's weird because you're watching this dude say these things and he believes it. You know what? I can't even say that. I can't even say that he believes it. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, which is why he has this goofy ass look on his face. So, you know, there's that. And then he's talking about whether or not, you know, like the liberal agenda, like they divide people by race. And here's one of the things that I really want to kind of want to say is that the difference between what one would call the liberal agenda and the conservative agenda is not so much about dividing folks by race, but just simply acknowledging that there are differences amongst the people and that there are different identities amongst the people. There are Asian Americans, there are African Americans, there are Arab Americans, there are European Americans. There's a lot of different ways in which folks identify. There are a lot of LGBT people that identify a certain way. And what tends to happen is with the liberal, or what we call the liberal agenda, there is at least an acknowledgement that there are different folks and they have separate concerns that don't necessarily involve everyone, right? It's an honest approach to how to deal with the people, as opposed to saying, well, fuck all the things that make you different. Fuck all the things that make you who you are. You just gonna deal with us here in this existence of America. And most of the time that default existence is a white one. So it's now all of a sudden, everybody's American. Yeah, everybody's American, but you want them to forget who and what made them who they are. And at least with the one would call the progressive or liberal agenda, whatever, at least there's a certain acknowledgement of those things that we don't necessarily see all the time from the Republican Party or from the conservative-leaning politicians, pundits, and talking heads, so to speak. So, yeah, man, like this Jeffrey Lord dude, he understands exactly what it is that he's doing. And he's enjoying himself immensely. And I post this shit on Facebook and on Twitter so you guys can see exactly what it is I'm talking about. But, yeah, man, fuck this guy.
Absurd.
It is not
the Democratic Party of the South in the old days was a racist party, and you are correct, sir. They were a violent party, and you are correct,
sir. How do you think we got Woodrow Wilson elected?
But hold on a second. That's not the Democratic Party of today. So what are you talking about that for? You played these games.
It is the Democratic Party of today. The Democratic Party of today divides by race.
I have a kid, 7 years old.
Right.
He can't even watch. I used to want him to say, I don't want you watching the Kardashians. I want you watching the news so you can learn something. You know what? Watching all this nonsense in your party, he turns around and he says, you know, Dad, you're a liar. He doesn't even know what the word means, but he sees so much vitriol from your party.
Right.
He brings that into our house. Now we got to have him watching, you know, Nick Jr. He can't even absorb civics because of what's going on in your party. The circus wing in your party. Do not play and tell Donald Trump. I know you. I trust you. Tell Donald Trump. He needs, for my children's sake, for the children's sake of America, if he's going to leave this country, he needs to be as passionate about what is happening
we have to
people
be
in
passionate.
My,
we
in
have
my
to,
community, as anybody else.
We have to be passionate about making sure that, as Robert Kennedy used to say, that this country is colorblind. We have to, as President Kennedy used to say in that Birmingham speech, that race has no place in American life or law. That's what we have to do. And we have lost that totally because the Democratic Party insists on dividing people by race, and it's wrong. It's morally wrong.
All right. Now, what I will say is this, is that Van Jones has a hell of a lot more patience than I do. I couldn't tell you how many times I probably would have wanted to punch that guy in the fucking face every time he said something with that goofy ass grin on his face as if I didn't know what the hell was being said. I couldn't tell you. So, yeah, shout out to Van Jones for that level of patience. He had the patience of Job while dealing with that dude, Jeffrey Lord, talking about this very issue, about the way in which Donald Trump tries to court that racist element electorate while at the same time acting as if he knows nothing about it. So, yeah, man, that happened this week. All right, now, it's time for our segments this week. And we got an asshead of the week this week. And here we go.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Yeah, man. Now, this week's ass hat of the week is none other than Lord Jamar. Lord Jamar is our ass hat of the week this week, man. I saw an article this week of, I saw this video before I saw the article. And the article was talking about Lord Jamar blaming black women for the destruction of the black family, right? And I've said this before, man. Like, when it comes to Lord Jamar, I'm sort of like this. Like, if you find yourself agreeing with anything Lord Jamar said, like, he's one of those kind of niggas. Like, if you find yourself agreeing with anything Lord Jamar said, you start checking yourself. You know what I mean? Just like, yo, you could be like, Steph Curry is probably the best shooter I ever seen, dog. And Lord Jamar would be sitting there like, yeah, man, you're probably right. You'd be like, well, you know what? On second thought. Like, you can't find, like, he's one of those dudes, man. Like, he says stupid shit all the time. And, it's one of those things, man, where with Lord Jamar, there's an element of the Ashy Nigga Hotep coalition who gravitates towards the things that Lord Jamar say, right? And some of the things he'll say, he'll wrap it up in some of these glowing euphemisms, right? So he'll call black women queens and all these other things. And act as if that totally admonishes him or that absolves him of some of the misogynistic, stupid shit that he'll say. So listen to what he said when they were asking him about Future and Ciara and the fact that Ciara had sued Future for $15 million for publicly disparaging her in the media. Here's what he had to say.
So you have a system that promotes single mothers.
Right.
And even if
that promotes destabilization of the family.
Yeah. Because I don't care how much a mother could say, well, I'm the mother and the father.
You're not.
You're not.
You're lying to yourself.
Yeah. A mother cannot be a father to a daughter or a son. A father cannot be a mother to a daughter or a son. It's just a completely different role that you could try to emulate to the best of your ability. And, you know, shout out to all the single mothers out there, you know, who are getting by. But I don't think that there you could really find very many mothers out there that prefer that situation.
Well, first of all, we're seeing the ramifications of all these single mothers now, with all these young boys out here running around, you know, killing each other based on emotion. Because who was the person that they looked up to, an emotional creature?
Right, a woman.
Which is a woman.
Yeah.
All right. Uh-oh. Sorry about that. But here's one of the things that, right off the top, is a bit fucked up or a bit problematic. The fact that this is why we have all these killings in the communities, because these guys are emotional and they looked up to their mothers and their mothers were emotional. So they're killing all these dudes off of emotion. And he goes on to further say, hold on, as a matter of fact, I'm sorry.
Not saying that emotional is bad, but that's more of the woman's makeup, is to be emotional, where the man is more rational.
Yeah.
That's the yin and the yang. We're two parts of one whole.
Yeah, we have.
And when you cut off one half,
yeah,
it's unbalanced.
Yeah, we don't.
All right. This is why I should have waited before I tried to make this point. The fact that he tried to basically allude to the fact that we see women as more emotional and men as more rational, as if women can't be rational, that women can't raise rational human beings, that women can't raise rational young men, is problematic and is fucked up and is sexist and is misogynistic, right? And we have to, like, and I know a lot of brothers, when they listen to that, they see nothing wrong with what he said, because they aren't forced to really think about it, right? It's something that's kind of innate. It's something that's kind of been taught to us and has been ingrained in us since we were young men and before we were young boys. These are some of the things that have been ingrained in us. And it's one of you will listen to that. Some brothers will listen to that and be like, well, what the fuck did he say wrong? There's a lot of what he said there that was wrong. Especially dealing with the fact that how we look at women as just purely emotional creatures that aren't able to think rationally, that aren't able to use logic in how they raise their sons, right? Another thing, too, is the fact that, you know, they talked about the welfare system. They started off with, they were talking about welfare and everything else and how the welfare incentivizes single motherhood and how Black women are being incentivized to destabilize the Black family. Well, the reason that's also bullshit is because when you impregnate a woman, you can therefore do what you're supposed to do. Take care of that child yourself. But what tends to happen a lot is that a lot of dudes have no issue with walking away from their responsibilities as fathers. And they will allow that woman to go on welfare in order to help maintain that child. They will allow it. They will allow it. They will allow that before, especially if you know, they can try to get out of paying any child support. They will allow it. So, off top, the system doesn't have to have anything to do with your children at all. That's a decision that you and that mother have to stand up and make for yourselves, right? How are we going to raise this child together? How is this child going to be affected by the fact that I don't necessarily live here? How are we going to work this out? How am I going to raise my child? How do we divide the custody of the child? How do we make sure that this child goes to school and get the proper education that it deserves? These are conversations that you're supposed to be having before you even lay down with someone, right? Now, I know a lot of times that ain't what's happening. But even after you didn't got this person pregnant, okay, you got 9 months. These are conversations that you really need to be having. And a lot of times what ends up happening is after those 9 months, after that baby gets here, now all of a sudden folks are feeling different ways, man. Folks are feeling different ways. And a lot of dudes have the ability to just walk away from a situation. And so you can't just say that the system incentivizes single motherhood. No, it's a lot of dudes just able and willing to walk the fuck away from their families, and there's no accountability being asked for there. None. And the fucked up thing about it is, like, you know, a lot of dudes, a lot of brothers will seek accountability from black women, right? There's a certain level, like, when Lord Jamar alludes to the fact that we got these young boys out here killing people based on emotion, and they get their emotions from their mother and all these other things, right? And they're asking for these single mothers to take into account that you raised this demon seed-ass son, and these are the results of your labor, and this is the results in the community. And a lot of dudes will sit up and they will try to have this level of accountability for these women for raising these boys, right? But they don't ask for that same level of accountability for themselves. That woman didn't make that child by herself. She made that with you. That's just as much your responsibility as it is hers. Your absence in this child's life is just as much of a contributor to that child's criminal activity as her raising that child. Just as much a contributor. And so it's weird to watch so many black men fall into this. So many black dudes willing to throw black women under the bus and say that you're the reason why this is what's going on in the community. We're like, hey man, you had every opportunity to kind of help mitigate that. What are you doing to help mitigate that? Are you a coach? Are you a counselor? Are you a mentor? Are you a teacher? What are you doing when you see young boys out here fucking up? As a grown man, what are you doing when you see young boys out there fucking up? Are you trying to give them any type of correction? Are you that respected man in the neighborhood where the kids look to you like, hey, Mr. So-and-so, I need to talk to somebody about something? Are you that guy? Do you want to be that guy? Or are you that dude that's sitting on the porch saying, that's why these kids are fucked up now. They got these damn single mamas out here raising these damn demon seed ass kids, and they ain't doing what they supposed to do. And never once do we say, hey, man, where your daddy at? And hold the daddies just as accountable. And that's why what Lord Jamar said was fucked up. And that's why Lord Jamar is the ass hat of the week. That ashy nigga logic gotta go.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And now we're coming up to our champ of the week.
The champ is here. The champ is here. The champ is here.
All right. Now, the champ of the week this week, man, is former Detroit City Council person, City Council President Gil Hill. And the reason that I'm naming Gil Hill champ of the week is Gil Hill passed away over the course of last week. And he had been in the hospital for pneumonia. I think he went into the hospital for pneumonia on February 17th, and he passed away February 29th, leap year. And the reason that Gil Hill is notable, not only because he was a city council president, but Gil Hill was actually known worldwide. If you've ever seen a Beverly Hills Cop movie, you know who Gil Hill is. Here's a clip as it loads up. I'm waiting for it to load.
Fucking bully in here.
All right, there's time to show time, okay?
Hey, boss, I know what you're going to say, but
you mind telling me where the fuck you come off going undercover without authorization from me? What the fuck is this all about? You want to play some fucking bullshit cowboy cop? Go do it in somebody else's precinct.
Don't you want to hear my side of the story?
What's your fucking side of the story?
Let's hear your side of the story.
Hey, Axel, I'm not taking any more of this shit from you. How much this little stunt of yours is going to cost this city?
I don't think cost is the issue here, sir. I think the issue should be my blatant disregard for proper procedure.
You damn right, wise ass. The mayor called the chief called the deputy chief just chewed my ass out. You see, I don't have any bit of it left, don't you? When the fuck did you get a truckload of cigarettes from, anyway?
From the Dearborn hijack.
From the Dearborn hijack? That fucking bus went down last week. That truck is supposed to be in the damn pound.
A
trying to tell you.
Jeffrey, this is none of your fucking business.
This is not my locker.
Listen, Axel. No more of these setups, you understand? You're a good cop. And you got great potential, but you don't know every fucking thing. And I'm tired of taking the heat for your ass. One more time, you're out on the street. Do you understand me?
Boss, let me tell you.
Do you understand me?
All right. Now, outside of being the foul mouth, Inspector Todd in the Beverly Hills Cop movies, Gil Hill was a former city council president. He was a former Detroit Police Department homicide detective. He ran for mayor in 2001. Channel 2 did a piece on Gil Hill this week, so I'll just play that here. Or I won't play that here. It won't play. Oh, well. Wait. Well, it's taking too long. But, yeah, Channel 2 did a piece on Gil Hill this week, man. He was a former city council president, former homicide detective, former mayoral candidate. He lost in 2001 to Kwame Kilpatrick. He could have been mayor of this city. And he was always a champion of the city of Detroit, man. And he represented the city of Detroit well. He had been out of public life for almost 15 years. He was 84 when he passed away, but Gil Hill, for the way in which he represented Detroit and the way in which he served Detroit for many years, Gil Hill is the Spare and Pour podcast champ of the week. Yeah, man, but it's coming up to the listener feedback portion of the show. It's almost time for me to get out of here. But I got an email here that I'm going to read. And so let me pull this up. We can get to this email. All right, and this email comes from Reggie, come from the homie Reggie. And Reggie writes in to say, hey, what's up, Span? First, let me say that I can appreciate you acknowledging that the Tommy Lauren angle you took could have been problematic, considering you don't want to appear to be coming down on a woman. As much as you speak on how men deal with women and how much respect should be given to their voices, I was happy to see that you are aware of how that may come across, even if you don't agree with her. So there's that. Okay, well, here's the thing, Reggie, man. Like I said, I don't even know so much if I'm really worried about whether or not it looked as if I was coming down on a woman. And I think really what I was trying to get to was the fact that here was somebody who came out of their mouth and said something reckless, and there was a little bit of a clapback, and then they tried to project themselves as a victim when they could have just left well enough alone, right? Like they didn't have to say anything, but they felt the need to say anything. They felt the need to say something. They got back what they weren't expecting, and now they're a victim. And the reason that I even question whether or not she was receiving death threats and everything else was that, you know, on her show, she was showing screenshots of some of the things that were being sent her way, and none of them were death threats. None of them. And it comes across like, you know, it just came across as not real. Like, to me, like, it just came across like not real. Like, it was one of those things where, hey, I said something bad and people are coming at me and now my feelings are hurt. And I don't even know if right now if I'm articulating this in the way I really wanted to. But I just simply didn't believe what Tommy Lauren was saying, simply because not only has she been saying some really, you know, she was really misinformed with the Black Panthers, but she was also misinformed as to what Beyonce's motives were. She was also misinformed on what the progressive agenda was, these Hollywood elites, as they like to say. But with the death threats thing, I just simply didn't believe that was happening in the way in which she said it was. And we saw Owen Benjamin also say those exact same things, that he was receiving death threats and all these things. Like, okay, well, who are these people coming at y'all? Point them out, man. Who are these people coming at y'all? And if these people are coming at y'all in that way, point them out. In much the same way that, say, for instance, all those people, that Donald Trump rally in Indiana. Donald Trump rally in Indiana where that sister was being pushed around and yelled at and everything else, and you started seeing, hey, folks were being put on blast. One of those kids or one of those guys in there was trying to be a United States Marine, and the United States Marines, after seeing that, was like, nah, fuck you, and gave him the boot. There was also that older guy who was a veteran, who's walking around with his name on his shirt, proud to be a veteran, but also discriminated against a young black woman, putting his hands on a young black woman, pushing her around. Nobody said anything to him. He's perfectly empowered in that moment. So we put these people on blast. We put these folks on blast and wish to shame them to make sure that those types of things don't happen again. It's the way, those are the consequences, right? Because we've gotten to a point where sometimes being put on blast is the way in which you get those consequences meted out. So that was my point, man. I wasn't necessarily worried about her being a woman because, again, Owen Benjamin did the same goddamn thing. So, yeah, man. I mean, like I said, my beef with her was the fact that what she was saying was wrong. You know, not had nothing to do with whether or not she was a woman or not. What she was saying was wrong. And, yeah, the whole death threat thing kind of ratcheted that up a little bit. But, yeah, man. Also, she writes in to say, I wanted to ask you about Chris Rock's opening monologue at the Oscars and what you thought about it. It seems a lot of people have been coming at Chris Rock's neck as of late for his performance, Asian and black people in particular. Cat Williams has come for him publicly, and so has Tyrese. Have you seen the monologue, and what are your thoughts on the people coming at him? Well, I saw the monologue. That was the only part of the Oscars that I did watch. I watched the Oscars when that happened. And honestly, dude, I mean, it was a mediocre monologue to me at best. And part of it was like, I felt, you know, I get it that he, you know, he's at work, so to speak. And there was only so far that Chris Rock could go with what he was saying. Chris Rock still has to work with a lot of those people in that audience, whether or not that's to make a movie, whether or not that's to get another stand-up special filmed, whether or not that's, you know, whatever, you know, whether or not there's another, if he decides to go into directing or producing, having the people in that room kind of helps him facilitate that. As much as we would like to think that it doesn't, it helps him to be able to facilitate that. So I understood that he had to kind of spread it around. The one thing that really bothered me, though, was the joke about lynchings and worried and speaking as if black folks don't have anything to protest. So we're protesting the Oscars, and then juxtapose that with him saying very much later than that, that black folks are being shot down while going to the movies, that going to see the movies that were being honored that night. So it was like, which one is it, Chris? You know? And so, like, like, I honestly, it wasn't all that. Like, I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, the Asian community being upset with Chris Rock, I can understand it. I am in no position to tell the Asian community how to feel about a joke made at their expense. In much the same way that no one can be in a position to tell black people how to feel about a joke made at their expense. Folks are going to feel how they want to feel. And if they feel like what happened in that joke was problematic for them, then by all means, it was problematic for them. And I have no beef with what they're saying about Chris Rock. Tyrese, it's amazing to me that Tyrese can get the nuance of the racial element there, but he couldn't get the sexual nuance of consent. Right? Yeah, man, that is interesting. Cat Williams has been coming at a lot of people. He came at Kevin Hart last I heard. So, yeah, man, I guess that's just what those guys are doing. But when it comes to Chris Rock, I mean, I know I kind of felt like it was going to be a lot of people who called him a coon, going to be a lot of people who called him a sellout. But at the same time, like, even as much as I was disappointed in the jokes about lynching and the fact that black folks don't have shit to talk or shit to protest, and the shots that he took at Jada Pinkett, outside of that, I understood that he has to work with those people. And he made some jokes, you know, at white folks too, and he tried to spread it around, but like, yeah, man, it was kind of middling, kind of like this damn response I'm giving to you right now, because I feel like I'm rambling. But yeah, man, I really wasn't feeling that. I wasn't really feeling this monologue, man. It wasn't all that to me. What else you got here? He says, and lastly, I wanted to know who you would endorse in the presidential campaign. I know you personally don't think that folks take those endorsements into consideration, but you'd be amazed at those who do, just I'm sorry, you'd be amazed at those who do just that if they deem you someone worthy to listen to. So if you, Mr. Span, had to endorse anyone this year, who would it be? Thanks, my good man, for yet another week and another good show. Reggie, thank you for writing in again, Reggie. I couldn't endorse anybody, man. I couldn't endorse anybody. That's one thing I am not going to do this presidential cycle is to tell anybody who to vote for. I'm tired of people telling me who to vote for. Most of the people that I know are telling me to vote for Bernie Sanders. And I've been watching this particular campaign quite closely. And Bernie Sanders, this, for me, ain't the guy. He isn't the guy that... he isn't the guy... Like. Here it is. For me, like when it comes to this Bernie Sanders or the Democratic nomination, Bernie Sanders is being sold as, you know, for black folks, is being sold as the ultimate choice for black people. Like, he cares so much about black people. Bernie Sanders marched with Dr. Martin Luther King. We're reminded of that so often. And I think it's, for me, it's insulting to think that just because this man marched in the civil rights, marched during the civil rights movement, that automatically qualifies him for my vote. That's insulting. To think that that's all he had to do, right? And it's interesting that a year and a half ago, a lot of black folks didn't know who the hell Bernie Sanders was. Now he's the savior of the black community. I don't get it. I don't get it. It's interesting to me that Bernie Sanders is an establishment candidate or a non-establishment candidate, but he's been in politics well over 30-something years. So I know it sounds like I'm just going in on Bernie Sanders, but I'm just saying, like, I'm tired of people telling me that that's who I need to vote for. And I'm not endorsing Hillary Clinton either. I remember what Hillary, you know, some of the shenanigans that Hillary Clinton was involved in when it comes to the not only the 1994 crime bill, which people have touted as Bernie Sanders one up and so over Hillary, even though he voted for that bill. But the fact that even when in 2008, how she thought the Democratic presidential nomination was hers by right. And some of the taxes that were used to come at President Barack Obama. I remember those things. I remember some of the racial tricks that they tried to use in South Carolina when in the South Carolina primary in 2008. I remember those things. So I'm having problems being excited about any of these candidates. And of course, when it comes to the Republican Party, it's a non-starter considering who they have running. So, yeah, man, I couldn't endorse anybody. I wouldn't tell anybody who to vote for at all. I can't. That's just not what I'm going to do. I'm not going to tell anybody who to vote for. I'm not going to tell anybody who not to vote for. That's just my thing. I can't endorse anybody, man. And not only that, I'm not a celebrity, bro. I get up and go to work every day just like all of y'all, man. I get up and work every day. I'm not a celebrity, man. So, yeah, man, no endorsements from the Span Report, all right? No endorsements. But thank you for writing in, Reggie. I appreciate you, and I hope to hear from you again soon, man. Real talk. But yeah, man, I got to get out of here. It's time for me to go. But before I get out of here, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at hotline area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those here on the show and, of course, respond in kind. You can also email the show at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails and I will read those here on the show, just like I just did with Reggie, and respond to you right here on the show. You can also follow your man on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. It's Mr_Span. Follow me there. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave 5-star reviews there, preferably. I'll read those 5-star reviews live here on the show. And you can subscribe to the show on Spreecast. I do these shows live on Spreecast every Saturday afternoon at 3:30 when I can, usually around 3:30. But yeah, Spreecast, you can watch the show live. You can participate in the chat room. You can present questions while I'm doing the show. Yeah, man, join me on Spreecast, man. It's a very good platform for podcasting and having a podcast audience. So yeah, join me on Spreecast. Subscribe to the show on Spreecast so you can get those updates when I'm getting ready to go live and all of that. Right. And all of that. And for all of your Span Report needs, man, go to www.thespanreport.com. All of the podcasts are available there. All of the videos are available there. All of the polls are available there. You can vote in the polls as well on thespanreport.com. And yeah, man, I got to get out of here. So until next time, fam. Peace.